This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne. This month marks the 100th anniversary of the U.S. Forest Service. Its original mission was to manage the nation's forests for the greatest good of the greatest number in the long run. But as pressures on the forests have increased over the last century, that mission has become more complex. In this second of two National Geographic radio expeditions, Elizabeth Arnold takes us beneath the forest floor, where the agency's scientists are studying a network of plumbing as valuable as the trees.
Standing at the top of Mackenzie Pass in Oregon's Willamette National Forest, there isn't a tree in sight. It's a barren black lava field, hardly what you'd think of as a forest, and certainly not what you'd think of as the source of a major system of waterways. But research scientist Gordon Grant says otherwise.
It's striking in a way that a story about where rivers come from and where water come from begins with a place where you can't see water and you can't see rivers.
Grant is a Forest Service hydrologist. His curiosity about the unusually stable flows of the rivers below led him up here to the volcanic rock at the top of the Cascade Mountains, where it rains 6 to 10 feet of water a year.
So where does the water go? Well, that's a mystery, but we're beginning to solve it.
Grant and other scientists are studying how the rain and snowmelt up here makes its way down through the cracks of this volcanic rock to a vast underground storage tank of water, with a volume the size of the Great Salt Lake. In here?
Yep. We're going to turn right up through this path.
But driving down the switchbacks of the mountain road about 10 miles, losing 3,000 feet of elevation, there's still no sign of us.
May I call the attention of the jury to the fact that we are standing in a grove of trees, and if you listen carefully, you hear the sound of mountain water.
So you're going to try and tell me anyway that the water came from up there and trickled all the way down. It went underground and is coming out here?
I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to show you.
Okay, let's go. The fact that water flows underground is not that surprising, but Grant says the amount of water that makes its way through these deep layers of volcanic rock and then shows up as a source of Oregon's major rivers is a big deal.
So, this looks like a big lake,
yeah.
But in fact, it's a huge spring complex.
The lake is perfectly still and absolutely clear straight to the bottom, but at its edges, water's percolating up, a steady supply of clear, cold water, no matter what the season or weather pattern. Grant and other scientists from the agency's Pacific Northwest Research Station have been studying these springs for the last few years.
On just a purely scientific level, they are one of the few windows we have into understanding how what I'll call the plumbing system of the Cascade Mountains works. They're also remarkable in the sense that the little boy in me that always wanted to know where the river began, well, by God, here the river begins.
And once the water comes out of the ground, the Forest Service has a duty to protect it. The beginning of this forest and the agency itself goes back to the passage of the Organic Act in 1897. Congress gave three reasons for setting aside forest reserves: to improve and maintain the forest, to provide a sustainable supply of timber, and to provide for favorable conditions of flow. And that means water.
Managing for water, thinking about how the other things that the Forest Service does, managing for timber, managing to maintain forests, protecting forest reserves against wildfire. How does all that interact with water? It's kind of built into the mission.
So the research that's done here by the Forest Service, studying flows, temperature, and the composition of this water as it makes its way downstream, is critical to decision-making about harvesting timber, building roads, establishing buffer zones, and maintaining culverts. In short, protecting this resource that's bubbling up from the ground here. The next day, we pass a patchwork of clear cuts and a massive dam as we drive deeper into the forest to hike into a place Grant says is being kept secret until it's more fully understood. It's hot and dry as we step over logging slash and bushwhack steeply down a tangle of sweet-smelling brush. There's no sign of water, but again, we can hear it. And just over the edge, the contrast is breathtaking. Waterfalls pour out of the hillside, cascading over deep green mosses. It's straight out of Ripley's Believe It or Not. What is going on here?
Right.
This
okay.
is wild.
Okay. It's a pretty wild place. You know, we've just climbed down about 100-foot cliff, and we're still about halfway down to the main river valley, but we see a wall of water in front of us that must be, probably about a football field in length. You can't even see the end of it from here. It just gets lost in the trees.
Just above it, there's nothing.
Above it, there is nothing. We hike in. Did you see any trace of a river? No clue that this is coming out. And yet, you're looking right here, right now, at 1% of the Willamette River's flow into Portland Harbor in the summertime. Comes out of this one place. And so the role that springs like this play is tremendous.
Grant says it's flowing at about 70 cubic feet a second.
It's hard to visualize 70 boxes that are 1 foot by 1 foot by 1 foot going by every second, but that's what it means.
Okay.
That's what it means.
So that's a pretty amazing asset when you think about the ever-increasing value of water.
We've actually done the back-of-the-envelope calculation that if you were able to capture the flow that's coming out of the spring and put it in those little water bottles that you buy for a dollar at your convenience store, this one spring would make you $3 million a day.
A day?
A day. A day.
And to put that in perspective, it could easily take care of all of the water needs of the major metropolitan center below. That, in and of itself, Grant says, is a tremendous responsibility and poses a new challenge to the Forest Service, which is the steward of this watershed.
And so it's part of our mission to take a fabulous resource like this, which is providing water for everything downstream, and to understand how it works, because that helps us understand, for example, can we cut the forest? Should we build a dam? Should we remove a dam? I mean, these become part and parcel of the mission, is to understand these issues.
After nearly a century of research, the agency and the public is beginning to recognize the nation's forests are not only of value as a source of lumber and as places to hike and hunt, camp and picnic, but that they're vast repositories of clean air and clean water, critical habitat for species at the brink of extinction. They may even hold answers to challenges as great as finding a cure for cancer, as in the bark of the Pacific yew, a tree right here in this forest that's dependent on the water flowing out of this hillside. And as it moves into its second century of service, Grant and other scientists believe their agency is truly beginning to see the forest for the trees. For Radio Expeditions, I'm Elizabeth Arnold.
Radio Expeditions is a co-production of NPR and the National Geographic Society. To see Glynn's Canyon Dam model, go to npr.org.